Hi, I'm Paul Kilgannon, and you're listening to the Breffni Early Show.
Breffni, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breffni Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breffni, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days, 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You're going to keep giving yourself challenges.
Welcome to episode 27 of the Breffni Early Show, where every week we try and bring you somebody who is inspirational, who will motivate you with their story. And this week, I think we have hit gold dust. This is one of my favorite stories over the last few years since I've moved back home to rural Ireland. Whatever comes up on social media every day, one of my favorite things to see popping up is a guy called Paul Kilgallen from Fit Kicks, which is a local gym in County Leitrim, Mohill County Leitrim, where we're sitting right now. But it's way more than just a gym, and his story and the whole ethos behind why we're sitting here in a gym owned by Paul Kilgallen is pretty impressive, and I think we're going to talk about it over the next hour or so. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Breffni. Pleasure.
Paul, we're sitting here in your gym, and on the face of it, come in, you look lean, you look fit, you look focused, the gym looks fabulous. There's nothing really untoward here, but I want to take it back a little bit, and we're going to speak in detail about maybe the last 7 or 8, 9 years of your life, but let's go back a little bit further. I want to talk to you about you as a teenager and your association with sport and your connection with sport. Tell us a bit about where you grew up, how you grew up, what you kind of got up to on a daily basis.
Dublin. I grew up Dublin originally, Breffni. I was a Sing Street lad, Sing Street Secondary School, there in centre of Dublin. So life up there, not the same as down here, totally different. Hustle and bustle of city life, teenager, you either fall into sport or you out of sport, and if you're out of sport, you're in a little bit of trouble when you're up in Dublin with it. But luckily, I was into sport. I was into soccer away from school and Gaelic in school, and it served me well for a number of years. It kept the weight down. I was always on a little bit of a chubbier side, big boned, as they would say.
I've used that
myself. It's a good explanation a lot of the time. But that was probably... that was just an excuse, I think, by myself and mother, saying big boned, when I was always on the lazy side at home. I'd go home and I'd sit down. I'd, during the teenage years, soccer and the Gaelic would have been the only bit of activity that I had. Unfortunately, I got injured. I was fifth year, I got injured, both ankles, pre-season. It was August. The manager, actually, we went up for a header. The manager came down on one of the ankles. Stubbornness, I was called the tank as a player because I had that bit of weight on me, left back. I could run, I was fast, I was always fast. But we went up for a header, the manager came down, went down on the ankle, and I was stubborn, continued on training, played matches when I shouldn't have. I should have rested. And compensating on one side, I went over on the other ankle then, very soon, a couple of weeks afterwards, and the ankle still give me bother to this day. But once that injury came, it was a couple of weeks off playing soccer, and I never went back. It was then that the weight crept on. It was being kept off through sport, but it's a massive problem with all teenagers, I think. From first years, you're active in primary school, you're running around the yard, and then you go to secondary school, and it's not cool to play sports in the yard. You might bounce a ball or something like that, but it's yapping. Very, very, very rare will you see a secondary school run playing games in the yard at lunchtime. And that happened to me. The injury came along, and then the weight crept on. And by the time I was starting work in the bank 2 years later, I would have been up 18, 19 stone. I hit the heaviest of weight at about 21, 22 stone. I have a print off from a chemist in Arva. It would have been around 2011, and the weight was 21 point something stone. And thankfully, things have changed since then.
At that age, you're late 20s? I'm saying in 2011?
At the heavies, yeah.
So you're late 20s, you've kind of not really been involved in sport for 10 years, and you're just, I suppose, unhappy with your weight. Obviously, if you've gone to the point of keeping that receipt and or the printout, and I know the ones because I was in the exact same spot 10 years ago, and I look at the journey you've had and the journey I had. I had a great start and did a whole lot of things for a year or two, but you really pushed it on way, way further. And like, obviously, we look across the microphone here at each other, and it's, we're very different body shapes now. I've kind of done various bits and pieces, but it's always been for a brief period, and then I've just fallen off the wagon again, whereas you've managed to keep that focus. Tell us a bit about the start, and I really want to talk about how you've managed to keep that motivation high, because that's always been my struggle. But tell us about your first steps from that 21 point whatever into just getting fit again. How did that start for you?
It all started a day out in Killykeen Forest Park in Cavan, Kilchandra. And myself and wife Martina, we were there with Jamie. Jamie would have been about 2 years old at the time, the eldest. And there's a lovely hill, and it was a lovely summer's day, and Jamie was two. He wouldn't have been that fast of a runner or anything like that. You're looking there.
Yeah, I'm looking at the wall here where you've got photos of yourself from around there. That time.
Yeah. You can even see playing with Harry in that photograph there on the grass, hands in pockets, not really fully engaging with them. And it was rolling down the hill with them, with Jamie, bouncing and hitting every bump, it seemed to be, as I went down this 6-7 foot little hill, rolling, having fun with Jamie. But then Jamie hopped up and he took off running, and the lake wasn't too far away. And there was me out of breath after rolling down, playing, and I couldn't chase him. I couldn't catch a two-year-old who was heading towards danger. And that was a real reality check. That was like, I can't do this. I need to do something. I tried numerous tries. I've tried since 18 or 19, since the weight crept on, going to gyms. There was one gym in Dublin. It was Carlisle Gym in Kimmich. And €1,100 I paid a personal trainer for 10 sessions.
Pardon?
€1,100. No, 10 sessions.
So did you know it was €110 a session, or did you just not go after a while?
No, I would have paid anything to go for this. He sold great promises to me. But it turned out that it was just a copy and paste of a sheet. Come in and do a few chest flies, go on the treadmill for 20 minutes. I'll stand beside you and we'll talk and we'll push you, but have no interest really in me, the person who's paying you all this money to lose the weight. I done the 10 sessions with him, and I continued. This would have been while paying for the gym membership, and I would have gotten hooked like everybody. You'd go crazy in December. You'd sign up to the gym, and you'd be there every day of the week, straight after work for a month, and then be gone. You'd fall off the wagon. The novelty wears off. You're not getting the results as quick as you want them. And then I go again, looking at something else 6 months later. The weight has gone, whatever weight I had lost, it more is on.
Where were you in your life at the moment? Because the Carlisle is in Dublin, so were you still in Dublin? Were you working?
That was still in Dublin. So that would have been while I was working in ACC Bank. ACC Bank, I worked in head office. Total difference, polar opposites of what I'm doing now. It was started off on the cash desk in there, and there was a canteen. That was one of the, probably the main factors of the weight gain, was because there was canteen and work subsidized. It was a government bank when I joined, so there was no, back then there was no expenses spared. I'd have my soup, I'd have a full dinner, and I'd have a big dessert, apple pie or banoffee pie, and I'd be so nice to the ladies on the counter that I'd be coming back up, give us the big portion there, you know, I'm big lad, I need feeding type thing. And that would be at 1 o'clock, 12:30, 1 o'clock. And then I'd go home then 5-6 o'clock, and there'd be a dinner on the table for me. And I'd eat that dinner as well. Sure, there's 3,000-4,000 calories coming in between two dinners, and probably the breakfast roll sitting at the desk at 10 o'clock in the morning as well.
And if you're sitting at a cash desk, you're not whacked
at all. Yeah, sitting down, and because I had lost interest in the Gaelic and the soccer, Gaelic probably serves you longer for a male, especially amateur levels. You can play Gaelic into your 30s and 40s. You know yourself down here with soccer clubs, there's not too many male adult teams for the likes of myself and yourself to go playing soccer with weekly. So Gaelic does a great thing there. It keeps the men active up until their late 20s or mid 30s, but then they fall into that vicious cycle like myself of when you stop, you can't eat as much as you would have eaten before. But anyway, it would have been the double dinners in the bank that the weight piled on, and there was a gym in the bank downstairs. So I had that ample opportunity to come in early in the morning or go in at lunchtime. And I would have done that for a month or so, 2 months, and been great, really strict with everything, and then fall off the wagon. And it was just a vicious circle for years and years, from 17, 18, 19, 20, up into mid-20s, when nothing worked. I found nothing that kept me engaged with it. And that's the one thing I do try and tell people down here. A lot of people tell you that the first step is the hardest. First step isn't the hardest, I don't think.
The first step is pretty hard.
It's a very tough step to take.
I have to agree with where I think you're heading. Like, it's that consistency of going out, whether it's 20 minutes every day or an hour, four or five times a week. It's difficult as keeping it going on a consistent basis the whole way through.
It's sticking to it. That's where everybody wavers a lot of the time, is just consistency and not seeing the bigger picture, not seeing what can be the results. If the results aren't coming there and then, we're not happy. We're going to toss it to the side. We live in a culture where we want everything now, and sometimes we don't want to work for it, or we don't want to wait for it, but we need to have that bit of patience. And luckily I found that day in Killykeen was a reality check.
So you're kind of scared by, I suppose, a couple of things. First of all, the safety of your child and your inability to deal with that on that immediate sense. But then there's also that kind of thing of, well, will I even be around in a couple months or years to do that? And talk to me about the first couple of days of working out. And so you have that day in Killykeen. What were your next steps?
The next steps was to get out walking. That's how I started. That's how, I won't say 99%, but a lot of people who'd contact me who have been inactive for the last 3-4 years who tell me I've done absolutely nothing. I'm sitting on my backside. I work in an office or I'm at home and I'm doing nothing. I wouldn't be able to run around the house without being out of breath. I don't tell them to come in and start with crazy fitness regimes. Walk. That's all you need to do. Get out and walk. Half an hour start off with, gradually build it up to 35 minutes, 40 minutes, 3-4 days a week. You don't have to be in a gym for an hour. Nobody has to be in a gym for an hour unless you have specific goals of getting very stronger or you're working towards an event or a tournament. You don't need to spend an hour. You can get as much done in a workout for 20 minutes than spending an hour looking at weights and spending a minute. I'm not one for, it would be high intensity stuff. The high intensity will get you the results quicker, it will. But
you just literally strapped on a pair of shoes.
Just went walking. And the walking led to a bit of jogging. And in between of the walking and the jogging, the diet started to take place. I was feeling better. I don't know if it was confident, maybe I was, depression would have been a thing. I wouldn't have been a person who suffered with bad depression, but I would have had down, I still have them, but I would have had down times where, like, I'm overweight, so what can I do about it? I'm happy as I am, I leave it. But deep down, I did want to lose the weight. Deep down, I wasn't being me. I was masking it by putting on bravado and putting on the...
Making a joke out of it.
Yes, making a joke. I'd go out in ACC Bank with a large group on the Friday night to the Barge pub there in Portobello, you know, where we sit out in the canal. And this type of weather, it would be gorgeous to be there now, but it would be... Pints.
Have you
pints.
Seen outside today? They were recording this. It's not a pleasant day outside.
Earlier, if you were up early, perhaps.
I was up early.
6:50 a.m. It was a glorious day.
I wasn't up at 6:50. I'm not going to lie. No.
But no, that was. They were the days when you'd go out and you'd drink a heap load of pints and be the jolly one at the party and happy-go-lucky, but deep down, I don't think I was. And that was a reality check the day in Killykeen. And then the confidence grew. The walking led to the jogging. The jogging led to joining the Slieve Russell in Cavan, beautiful hotel, and swimming. Got in for just swimming up and down, walking up and down in the water, the resistance of the water, standing at the side and kicking your legs underneath. Simple things, just getting more active. And then that led to venturing into the gym. And after about 2 years or so of that, a year and a half or so, luckily for me, I took a chance on one of them great government incentives to get people back to work, the CE scheme. And I was on whatever, €180 a week. And this job involved with the sports partnership, going around the schools in Leitrim. There wasn't a massive amount of extra money involved with it, but there was a lot of courses and different. I could learn something, and I could get out of the house, and I could use this to keep active and keep fit.
So when you started that scheme, when are we talking?
That was around February. Actually, you know, that was the 2nd of February. 2015, 2nd of February is my birthday.
Okay, and at what weight were you at that point?
I had got the weight down, so the weight had come off. 2012 to 2015, that was when the weight was coming off. So going from 21 stone down to, I would have been around 12, 13 stone around that stage.
That's impressive.
It was, looking back on it,
I feel like we've glossed over that whole journey.
We have glossed over.
And that
over,
for me
yeah.
is the whole thing. Like, I'm sitting here, I'm fascinated. I keep getting distracted if I'm not lying. Your story is fascinating, and I am listening to you, but I'm distracted completely by these photographs of this person I don't recognize. And we know each other a few years, going back a long time. I don't recognize you here.
I don't recognize myself.
Do people believe that's you when they come into the gym?
No. I'm not somebody for selling that. You've probably seen the post. Twice a year, three times a year, I'll put up the weight loss post on Facebook. But that was only after a bit of encouragement by family members and by people in the gym who knew I wasn't somebody. Them photographs didn't go up for probably about 6 or 7 months here until I was convinced that by putting them up, it might help people to see that it's possible.
Oh, I think so.
And it's amazing. Going around the schools in particular, the national schools, kids, they can be so funny. But there's a photograph there on the beach bar there with Jamie. The middle photograph
yes.
there, you can see it perfectly. It was the beach bar. That was another day that really sticks in my mind. I was wearing a cardigan and I had to search the house for about an hour, rushing to get out to find something to fit. And the T-shirt was probably a triple XL, bigger. You can see the cardigan bulging. My arms must be double or triple the size there. But that day sticks in my mind because of the clothes. But that would have been a photograph that when I spoke to the national school kids about the journey, they would ask me, which one am I? Am I Jamie, the 1.5-year-old? Or am I the very large man beside Jamie? They could not believe that I was the same person. They couldn't fathom that you can lose that weight. This was national school kids of 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds.
And we've just gone from strapping on a pair of shoes and going for a walk, which turned into a little bit of a jog, to losing 8 or 9 stone. Is it that simple?
It's not, no. A lot of things were in between of there. I can't credit this enough probably as well, and you'll probably shoot me, probably, but dairy was a massive thing. I quit the dairy. I'd come across this report about dairy intolerance, lactose intolerance, and being the cause of weight gain. That's not a natural substance for us to be taken into our bodies. And I think the way they put it was, you're drinking this liquid that's designed to make a very small cow very big in as quick a time as possible.
I've never looked at it like that before. Okay, yeah.
Which it is.
I see the logic of it, yeah. It's
breast milk for cows.
Yes.
And the idea of when we're feeding our children is to make them big and strong quickly, to help them grow. And we're feeding from that, we're feeding our children from that age that same substance that's to be making an animal to be, what, half a ton or so? But anyway,
so
the milk, what I decided to do was, what the report, the newspaper report was to just cut it out. Everybody thinks, I don't drink too much milk, or I'll eat a little bit of cheese, or I'll have the odd yogurt. But it's amazing how that little bit, maybe 3 or 4 cups of tea and the little 15 mils of milk that you're putting in and the yogurt that you have at nighttime and the 2 or 3 crackers and cheese that you have during the day, how it all adds up. But anyway, it was November of 2012. I started the walking in the late summer, and it was the November when I started looking at the dairy and quit the dairy. And it was Christmas. I couldn't recognize myself in the Christmas photograph. I hadn't lost a huge amount of weight. The scales didn't tell me I'd lost weight.
You just toned up.
My face, it had like deflated almost.
Do you feel you've got to know your own body very well over the last decade or so?
Yes. I don't think, I was never aware of what we're capable of doing. Everybody is capable of, we don't see what our bodies can do. You look at these yourself, cycling the world. Would you have thought 2 or 3 years before you took on that journey that you would have done it?
Oh, I didn't think I could cycle to the shops.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%.
But you've done it.
Yeah, but it wasn't a case of just rocking up today and saying I'm going to cycle around the world. There was a lot of prep work went into that. Like, the immediate 6 months beforehand, I was very lucky to be invited into a really, really good high-performance gym environment with some really good coaches. The gym has since closed, but to put it in context, the people who've left that gym, I've met 4 of them in their future lives, in their current lives. One's with the IRFU as a strength and conditioning coach, one's with Leinster Rugby, one's with Dublin GAA, and one was with Shamrock Rovers. So that's the quality of the people. They've all gone on to like the elite level of the top
so
clubs.
You were well planned.
Yeah, 100%. You were well prepped. Absolutely, yeah.
But you have to walk before you can run. So that preparation led you to that success.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't have done it without, I 100% I'm convinced, because I got 0 repetitive strain injuries. And when you consider cycling, anything from short days were 5-6 hours on the bike, long days 15-16 hours on the bike, and you're going up and over hills, like you're effectively climbing like Mount Everest every week, essentially on a bicycle, you know.
Done it injury free.
Injury free. Now, I did have a few injuries and a few stoppages, but they would all have been impact. So that would have been, say, post crash, or a post a fall, where I hurt my shoulder after a fall in Hungary. I hurt my knee and my shoulder after a crash in Thailand. But there was no wear and tear stuff.
Yeah.
The gym, to be fair, I think they recognized very quickly, very early on, that I wasn't going to be. I wasn't going to have a body shape like yours. I wasn't going to have an engine like a Roy Keane or a Gaelic footballer. That wasn't going to be the case. And I was going to train physically into the event and right through the event. They just focused on strengthening the various joints, my knees, my hips, my ankles.
I think there's a big, as you were saying there, you were saying you don't have the body shape. I don't think the body shape has much of an impact on the fitness of a person.
Oh, absolutely not.
There can be
I've like just in cycling terms, I've seen people who are twice my size, literally twice my size, and I'm big, and I've seen people who are twice my size fly up hills past me, and little skinny girls or boys who look like they could walk down the, like beach body confident.
Yeah.
They've got ooze in it.
Yeah.
But ask them to cycle from here to the end of the road. No,
gasping,
can't do it.
For
Or even to walk or run. Can't do it. Don't have, they have the physique, but they haven't put in the work.
Yeah, and that's what we need to do. We are capable of great things, but we need to have the dedication to prepare us. Them great things don't just happen. You don't land on the top of Mount Everest. You mentioned Mount Everest. You have to climb. You have to fight your way up there. So it's a long story. The weight loss is a long story. As I was saying there, the first step is very difficult. We'll talk about Everest. It could be the ice pack that's getting in. It's very tenuous. You'll fall. You'll have to climb back out of the ice pack. And then you're getting the Hillary step at the very end. That was probably the most toughest, the toughest part of conquering Mount Everest, is them last few steps. So it's like that. It's a constant journey. It doesn't stop just by signing up. Or some people think you pay a personal trainer or you pay for classes and you think that's going to get you the results. It's not. Hard work, like yourself, putting in the slog for 2-3 years before that big event made the event more enjoyable and successful.
It did, but I put weight on my cycle, which kind of was crazy because, to be honest, I had the opportunity to burn 6 or 7 thousand calories a day, and I took that opportunity and I ate whatever I wanted, literally whatever I wanted went in my mouth. And when I came back, I almost stopped cold turkey on the exercise. I did the odd charity cycle here.
You had had enough of this purple.
I had, but I was still eating maybe half of the calories. So probably still eating in the region of 4,000 or 4,500 calories a day, but no exercise. And so I just piled on weight. And really, I've done very little to arrest that over the last 4 or 5 years. signs on me. But it is easy, but it's not easy, if that makes sense. I know that makes absolutely no sense, but you know what I mean, is that if you just commit to showing up every day, and I didn't, but if you commit to showing up every day and doing whatever it is, whether that's a 20 minute walk or an hour or a run or a cycle or a swim, you will make that. And I think it's kudos to you that you've managed to do that. But it does bring us to the next stage. So you talked about 2014, I think 2015, when you were offered a new opportunity. You had been unemployed for a little period at that stage. Tell us about your employment history, maybe post ACC Bank.
Well, I went from ACC Bank, was a Rabobank bought ACC Bank, a Dutch bank. They were the triple rated, the highest rated triple rated bank in the world at the time. And ACC Bank would have been a great agricultural bank. It would have had a branch here in Mohill. And now it's gone, like all the other banks. But that was the beginning of it, back in 2006-ish time. Rabobank took over ACC Bank, maybe a couple of years before it, and gradually started closing down the branches, the agricultural, and then the head office jobs started to go. So I seen, kind of foreseen, that there wasn't much. It was always told, get yourself a job in the bank and you'll be safe. It'll be job for life type thing. But I seen it coming astray. Not that I was a financial expert or anything like that, but I had also a great interest in greyhounds. And Ted Hegarty, I don't know if you've ever come across him, a very flamboyant bookmaker in the greyhound track. And we would have known each other through the bank, and I went working with Ted on the side for a few extra quid during the weeks on the bag. So I'd be giving out a bit of change and cashing out the bets at the end of it, and I'd have a good head for numbers type thing. And that got me into the greyhounds, and through good things and bad things, it was a great time. It was a very enjoyable time. The nights that dogs, I had bought a few greyhounds, raced a few greyhounds. First greyhound we had bought, I think it was £250, Irish punts at the time. A friend of mine, Aidan Gallagher, up in Dublin, we worked in the bank together from Crumlin, and we bought this Spring Lake King. You can Google him when you get home. And his first race was in Shelbourne Park, and it was the race manager of Shelbourne Park. He had sold the dog through auction. Supposedly the dog had its time, but we had bought the dog anyway, and we'd put first night we decided we put a few quid on it. 15-1, the dog came in it. Unknown for greyhound circles. Normally it's 6-4 or 5-4, but massive money.
There's only six dogs in the race. Right?
Six dogs in the race. So this was massive. Yeah. This dog had no chance in hell for winning, but he got up on the line. He's on the greyhound data. I still watch the video from time to time. And you can actually see us on the stairs cheering our heads off.
Did you have much on him?
There was a few quid on it. I had less than Aiden had on it. But we made a nice few pound out. We made the money back on
the
dog.
Did you cover the cost of the dog? Yeah.
We did, definitely. But that money wouldn't have lasted long. It would have gone back to the bookmakers fairly quickly afterwards.
Would you have had a problem with gambling?
I would have, yes. I would have thought back then. And not that it would have been very noticeable, but going to work with the dogs. I then went to work with Paddy Powers. They were just coming on, pushing on the internet scene, and they were based in Belgrade, so I went working for them. So at that time I was working Ted night times and Paddy Power during the day times, and I would be having bets throughout the day. I'd be betting on a horse, or I'd be betting on the football type thing. I think if you're drinking every day of the week, or if you're betting every day of the week, you have some sort of a problem. I wouldn't have been somebody that was putting down thousands upon thousands on
just
dogs. The odd time there would have been 100. There was one bet, there was Man United, it was the end of the season, I can't remember who they were playing, but it was a fairly large bet, and I was working that day and they lost, and it wasn't a very enjoyable day in work. But it's so easy to not value money when you're gambling online, because it's just numbers.
It's just a number on the screen. Yeah. It's like a computer game.
It's not actual real money, I don't think. And that's what we try and tell ourselves. But
so how did you move from... This is the
dodgy time. This was
Paddy Power, you're overweight, you're gambling, you're in with the dogs at night,
drinking pints of Baileys at the weekends.
Pints of Baileys?
Pints of Baileys, yes. I wouldn't have had a drinking problem, but I would have been able to drink. I had to wait to kind of soak it, as they would say. And there would have been many times when the last order was a pint of Baileys to finish off the night down the lower deck, listening to Patsy Watchhorn and the Dublin City Ramblers. They were the good old days.
So how do you get from there to working with Leitrim Sports Partnership?
And yeah.
Even geographically, how does that work?
I go back a little bit further. While in the bank, living in Dublin, came home from Cyprus from holidays. And it was late summer, August, September-ish time. And we just got home from Cyprus and we were upstairs and I heard like fireworks. Bang, bang, bang. I was like, that's very odd for this time of the year for fireworks type thing. And then there was a bit of a hullabaloo outside. You could hear just noise and commotion. So I went out and literally 100 yards down the road, an innocent bystander was shot while he was fixing his car, drive-by shooting. So it was kind of like, this is crazy. This is where I'm living. It's shootings all over the place. It was in the middle of the Freddie Thompson feud up in Dublin with it all started with a row at Abracababra, and it's spiraled since then. It has Dublin torn apart. So thinking had met Martina in the bank, we'd met, and it just wasn't a place that you could see bringing up kids. We had connections with the west of Ireland. I had connections with the west of Ireland. Granny and granddad was Sligo. My mother was Donegal. So we had been down here during summer and things like that. And I came down here with a job through Paddy Power to be an assistant manager in Monaghan, in a new store that was open in Monaghan. So we moved down to Ballyconnell and commuting over from there to Monaghan. And that lasted a good year and a half. And unfortunately, Paddy Power, seeing that the recession is coming, we're tightening our belts. Maybe the recession was kicking in at that stage. But the manager was kept in most of the Paddy Power branches, and they let go of the other full-time staff to take on contract staff. So 2-3 hour students, having three or four of them on the books, pay a lot less to them than having an assistant manager in the shop as well. So lost the job in Paddy Power and lost the job in 2009, just before Martina was pregnant, and lost the job. And here we are down in the middle of the country with no job, no prospects, with a baby on the way. So it was a bit of a worrying, scared time to be facing that reality. And the rent up in Dublin is crazy. You're paying 1,200 euro for a one-bedroom apartment. And I remember down here it was 300 euro for a 3-4-bedroom house.
Yeah.
And the wages was much the same. The money was a little bit less. But that's how we ended up down here, was through that transfer with Paddy Power. And really enjoyed it. Now I have to say the gambling did probably kick in a little bit too much down there, because you're Boyle Sports around the corner, Bar One around the other corner, and you're getting out of the shop for a break and you're running in, you're having a tenner here, and 3-4 tenners, you lose, that's 30 quid. Next day you might say, oh, Man United and Chelsea are playing Bournemouth, I'll do a double on that, buy that 30 euro back, and some fluke of a nil-nil or something like this, and there's another 50 euro down the drain. So it wouldn't have been massive money, but it would have been that, yes, there's a day's wages gone, so are you working for anything type job? But thankfully, once I finished with Paddy Power, there wasn't the money to gamble, being back on the social welfare, and I just got away from gambling. So now I'm more than happy to sit watching UFC. I love the UFC, so I watch the UFC. Does be on most of the time, like stupid o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning, a Saturday morning. But I'm more than happy to sit and have a fiver on that and be disgusted with myself if I lose 3 or 4 fivers type job, where back then losing 50, 60, 100 quid a day, win it back tomorrow type job. So very easy to get sucked in. But that was, it kind of shows addiction can be hidden. It can be visible for somebody who's stumbling up and down the road coming from the pub at night time. But what about the people who drink the glass of wine every night at home, and then it turns into 2 glasses of wine, or they're on their phone? I could be sitting, I could be betting here, I could be playing roulettes on the phone, and you wouldn't have a clue that you're betting. So
people think it's a game, or they could
So thankfully, I have to say, because I don't know where that would have led if I had stayed with Paddy Power, how big the bets would have become type job. So, it was an awful shock being made let go a couple of months before you have a baby on the way. And then the social welfare was in, you're scrimping and scraping. The mood probably got a lot worse during that time. And just something had to give, and that rolling down the hill was the bit that was just too much. But thankfully the job, the sports partnership job, came along, and the only reason I took that was this is going to help keep the weight off for the next 3 years. And that has led to here, which is still surreal.
Because a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, they kind of look down their nose a little bit at those community employment schemes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a huge stigma involved with people who work on those. But I suppose this is a perfect case of, 5 years ago maybe, you took one of those roles, 4 years ago you took one of those roles, and it's developed into a situation where, I suppose, through your own hard work, through reputation, through opportunities that have come your way, you're now sitting in a two-unit complex here of your own making.
Crazy.
It's pretty amazing.
It's hard to, I walk in here many times, Breffany, and I'm like, this isn't me. This isn't mine. It's hard to believe that it has led to going into that meeting. I remember going in and I was, will I go ahead with it? Is it worth 20 euro? I'm going to be working 19 hours a week for 20 euro. Was all that I was going to be getting extra for the next 3 years. But thankfully, I said I'd go for it. I can see there's many and many of them C schemes and Jobs Bridge that were abused and had no prospects for anybody to make anything at the end of it. It was a great scheme to be on. The sports partnership were great. A lot of training, workshops, courses, different things like that. But just the experience, just to get that bit of confidence to go out and coach a walking group, or to go to an active age group, or to go to the kids and do stuff in schools.
But I think a lot of credit has to go to the sports partnership, as you mentioned, but also that is a partnership between St. Leitrim County Council, other sports entities around the county, and the Irish Sports Council, now Sport Ireland. A lot of credit has to go to the fact that they didn't abuse that.
Yeah.
I suppose maybe they did. It's still cheap labour for them, but if you're coming out the other end with something like this, it's a benefit for everybody, really.
Yeah, it is. They were a great support. Now, maybe if it was a different organisation, it wouldn't have had the same outcome from it. But the one thing I didn't expect was at the end of the CE scheme to be just be the end of the CE scheme. There was no real aftercare. There was no prepping yourself from the government or from the social welfare to say, you're coming off the you're coming off the CE scheme now in 6 months' time. Send us in your new details or whatever. We'll make sure we're on the system. I finished up the CE scheme, and the other man that was on the CE scheme with me both received no money for the next 2 weeks because we were just taken off the CE scheme and off the social welfare. Nobody said to look at the future. Nobody was telling us, your CE scheme will be finishing in 3 years' time. What are we going to do ourselves after? I give myself the credit for that. I could have quite easily not gone with this role or gone with the fitness side of things and be back on the social welfare now, being off that conveyor belt. So the sports partnership were great there. The sports partnership were my employer. The social welfare aspect, that side to it, was pretty poor. They ticked their box with getting a CE person off the live register onto one of these CE schemes, but the support that was given during it was non-existent, really. So the you're lucky as to who you get as your employer on them and what you do it yourself.
Would you advise people in a similar situation, maybe at home, stuck in a rut, can't get work, particularly in rural Ireland, where jobs aren't that common if you're looking outside of the norm? What would your advice be to someone in that situation? Go for it.
Many a time I've sang the praises of the Sports Partnership CE scheme. When myself and Pat, we finished up the same time, and there was advertisements for our roles became available. And I could go through 5-6 people who were me 4 or 5 years ago, who are sitting at home, who have just had young kids, their prospects for getting a job maybe aren't very, very good. And speaking to them, it's hard for them to see that there can be, even though I can give them me as an example, but nobody went for it. Nobody thought that it was worth their while to invest in yourself, to take maybe a hit, to go working for cheap, be a manual, be a cheap skivvy for 3 or 4 years, but work hard during it and take everything, take all the courses, take all the workshops that you can get and expand your knowledge, find something that you can make a go of after it. But nobody went for it. And them CE schemes, they're still not filled. One person in Leitrim has taken it, and the other spot is still empty.
We're sitting in the room, as we mentioned. We've mentioned paid reference to it a few times, and I'm sitting on an AstroTurf floor with gym mats laid out. There's free weights up in the other slightly upstairs section of the other unit that you have here in Mohill in the education centre. It's all very much open space, friendly, welcoming, bright colours. How long have you been dreaming about this place?
I started off the classes going around halls that would have been back in 2016. I think it was late 2016. going around Kilchandra, Carrigaline. And what got me into it was being good with the kids in the schools, being able to put on fun games that they weren't standing in lines queued up waiting for 10 people to have a go and kick a ball once and run to the back of the line. I hate that. I want everybody active at the same time. So I found that I was good at that side of things with Sports Partnership and with Jamie and Harry would have been born at this stage now as well. Jack would have been born young as well. But very little in terms of the kids who don't like Gaelic or don't like soccer. Very little for them to do. So I thought I'd put on a non-competitive sports fitness class for kids. And that's how it started. That's how the journey started off, was getting into Carrigaline Hall and doing like soccer games, bowling with soccer balls, where you're kicking the cones off the skittles, or dodgeball. Anything where we didn't really have to count scores, where it was just fun. These, we're talking about kids from 7, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They could win 10-0 and be happy.
They could lose 10-0
and not know and still be delighted with themselves. So normally what I do say to the kids at the end of it, did you have fun? And they'll say, yeah, we had fun. So that's more important than any result at that age. I can see where the competitiveness needs to come in later. But that led then to getting into adult boxercise and then into teen fitness. And that was all based out of Carrigaline Hall for a good year or so it was. And unfortunately, between politics and one thing and another, I think the classes got too popular. And the parish pulled the plug on the whole thing overnight. It was kids' classes. We'd have about 60-odd kids coming in for soccer. Two adults, three adults, if we had over 25 at the soccer. Parents could drop them and run, was normally what we'd call it. I really enjoy parents stay and watch their kids during the fitness or during the soccer. It's amazing when a kid does something good, they'll always look to the parent straight away. That's their first glance is to them.
Mommy, look at me, look what I can do.
Yeah, and it's sad now that we've heads stuck in phones a lot of the times, that we're missing them things, even at home. It doesn't have to be sport. But there was always the adults. Always the adults were to be, not the adults that were shouting to be given out to get into line and all, but to treat the children with the respect that they deserve, to have the fun. We don't need to be shouting at kids to get our point across.
In terms of the practical side of this, because this isn't cheap, and there are bills and there are rates and there are rents and all that sort of stuff. How do you go from like a CE scheme to this?
Being silly, stupid and brave and stubborn is probably what got it through. I didn't have thousands starting off this. I had a couple of €100. I didn't even have the price of the flooring. The flooring that was needed, concrete flooring, at the bottom, and you couldn't do any fitness class or exercise class on that. So it needed some sort of padded flooring before anything else, before I could have people walk in, padded flooring. My insurance was nice and cheap when I was going hall to hall, but because I have four walls now, the insurance is crazy. It's a four-figure amount for insurance. Rates is another killer. But at the beginning, it was literally positive thinking, getting... Believe in yourself. You don't need a massive amount of capital behind you for whatever, really, unless it's a massive project. But start at what you have, work your way up, invest what you have back into the business, and pray that it works out. So I got the first delivery of the flooring, and I remember I couldn't afford to buy the full flooring in one go. So there was about 12 mats left. I think I needed 30-odd mats for this room here at €65 a pop. So I managed that first bill. About a week later, I ordered the rest of the mats and they arrived. So I had the flooring down. I was never handy. I would have been the worst handy man ever. But I'm looking at black straight lines, relatively straight on the wall. And partition, we have two rooms upstairs going together, knocked that wall down myself. It was already plinthed across, so somebody had already knocked through, but I'd done it myself. And it's amazing when you have a want to do it and a desire to do it, what you can do. And positive thinking, the secret book, you probably heard
I've
of
I've
it.
Read it, yeah.
And there's a few times you've spoken about yourself during this where you've said you can't, or I'm not going to be somebody that can be that person. Change that, Brett. Get it to be that you can.
Probably accidental, to be fair.
Yeah, but that's subconsciously in your mind.
Yeah, I'm funny that you've picked that up, because there have been times in the last 3 or 4 years when I have not believed in myself.
That's the worst.
Kind of changed now in recent weeks, and this podcast is back. There's whole more projects coming down the line. And having just gone back into a bit of a lull over the last few weeks and months and years, it's nice to be on the upward trajectory of that again. And maybe my language is a key place to start on that. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, but just telling yourself that you can do these things, that you will succeed. I can open a gym. I can. I remember the business plan had, I think it was about six or ten people in for 3 or 4 classes a week. And then gradually building that up and up. And I had never aspirations of having a second unit. I didn't even want the upstairs to be done originally. That was lino upstairs, and there was no intention of getting that floored. It was just going to be storage type job. But we went upstairs, made use of it for HIIT classes, so high intensity classes, hopping about the place. But then, thankfully, there's good suspension in the ceiling for the bouncing of the HIIT classes. But no, just having a little bit of faith and believing you can. You don't need millions. You don't need a rich daddy bank loans to follow a dream. Start what you have, use what you have, and just hopefully watch it grow.
Let's talk a little bit about here. It's called Fit Kicks. Where can people find out about it?
Facebook. Instagram. If you're on Facebook, you're probably fed up of my posts by now. I put out a good few posts, but Facebook is probably the main way you can find us. Also on www.fitkicksleitrim.com, and we have a few nice features within Fit Kicks. We have a great social group. That was one of the big things that I was eager to get going early on in starting out Fit Kicks. So opened up here around late September of 2017, and it was fairly soon that we went off to Quilche Mountain, the boardwalk.
Quilche.
We went off there to the boardwalk, and that was a fantastic day. That was our first social outing. And the idea was to have a social group outside of the gym element to it, where you didn't have to go to the pub to get that social interaction. It didn't have to be expensive. So we do a lot of events. We try, and if we're paying for something, we try and keep about €30. Not that it's dear enough, but it's reasonable.
Cheaper than a night out.
But we've gone surfing, we've climbed mountains, we were up there in about 6 foot of snow for our second journey. We were only back from surfing last week. We've numerous things. We've took on burpee challenges. They're running Dublin marathons. They've ran in London. The social side has taken off. It's been fantastic. There's jogging groups that meet before classes. I encourage them to jog. Probably a contradiction to getting them in here for classes, and you can go and jog for yourself, but variety is key. Come in here 6-7 days a week for classes every day, you'll soon get bored, you'll get fed up, even though the classes are kept fresh and everything. If I was doing that for 6 months, I'd want a little bit away from it probably. And we're breaking it up, going for a jog, going for a swim. You'll be fitter, you'll be refreshed coming in for classes, you'll be energetic. If you specialize on coming in to training to, let's say, lift heavy weights, you'll get very strong, you'll lift heavy weights. But if you were asked to run in an emergency, you'd have no energy to run. Same with somebody who just runs for their training. They could run 5 kilometers in 17 minutes. But if they were in an emergency and they needed to lift me off the ground or to lift something.
You're little. Lift me off the ground, maybe.
But would they be able to do that? So
I understand.
Specialise in not specialising in whatever your sport or your area is.
Yeah. It's been a really, really lovely chat with you. We end the show every week with the same question. If you could ask the listeners to do one thing, what would that be?
That's a good one. That is a good one. I suppose believe in themselves, to have confidence in yourself. There's so many people that doubt themselves, that let self-doubt control what they do on a daily basis. You wake up in the morning and, oh, I have to go to work. Oh, it's going to be a long day today. I'm not able for this job or type of thing. You're putting yourself down. Believe in yourself. Have confidence in yourself. Take little mini wins. Don't think that it's going to be plain sailing every day of your life. Life is tough, but believe in yourself. Start noting down little mini wins, even if it's small. So today, this would be my mini win, speaking into a microphone. Public speaking wouldn't be something. I can stand in front of a class. Give me a class full of people, I can stand there. But one-to-one, it's difficult. So this is a mini win. Have a mini win. Have small little goals, but basically believe in yourself. Have confidence in yourself. And have it that it's you versus you, not anybody else. We're not, me and yourself, we're not going to be Usain Bolts, or we're not going to be Roy Keens or anything like that. We're not training to be elite athletes. So why should we care if Tommy over there can lift 100 kg and I can only lift 80 kg? Did you work hard, should be the question. Did you put your full effort into it? So what anybody else thinks or what they can do. Do the best that you can do yourself and believe in yourself.
It's a absolutely lovely way to finish up today's show.
Pleasure, Brefley.
Paul Kilgallen of Fit Kicks in Mohill. It's an amazing story. So many obstacles, so many setbacks. And to be here laughing and smiling and joking at the end of it in your own gym, congratulations. Of course, you can get this and all of the previous episodes of the Brefley Early Show on Spotify, on Podomatic, wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe. It's completely free and always will be advert free and totally free to listen to. And you can listen to all of the back catalogue of interviews. I think this is episode number 27. So there's 26 former guests, including Paralympic champions, DECA Ironman champions, and many, many more people on that list. If you go to brefneyearly.com or look for the Brefney Early Show in your podcast apps, you will find it. It's been an absolute pleasure, of course, as always, this week. And I think if you haven't been inspired by this week's show and this week's guest in Paul, I really don't know what you can do to get yourself off that couch. I'm out for a run, and then I think we're gonna swim home.
Yeah,
and then I'm not sure what I'm gonna do after that. But Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brefney.